Chapter 4 The Secret Room. Even though JJ was upset, he didn't want to make a scene in front of everyone. He kept his annoyance to himself until later that night, when he and Candace were in the privacy of their room, and he thought no one could hear them. But Summer, Melissa, and I did hear, because we were in the hidden liquor room under the house. As eager as Summer and I were to see the secret room, we had waited until after dinner to explore it, mostly because Daisy Creek had baked what was possibly the most delicious-looking berry crumble I had ever seen. And it had tasted even better than it looked, as it was stuffed with local strawberries, blackberries, and huckleberries, then topped with homemade whipped cream. After that, we had watched the sun set, which was beautiful. Since we were relatively far north and it was the heart of summer, it was 10 p.m. by the time the stars came out. All the adults adjourned to the living room for after-dinner drinks, except for JJ and Candace, who went to their guest room, and Arturo and Daisy, who had gone home to their apartment in West Yellowstone after serving dessert. "Once you get to be our age, you realize there's nothing better than turning in early," Arturo had explained. Jasmine and the ranch hands weren't concerned about having a drink before heading home because the bunkhouse was only a short walk away. Each of them had an individual apartment, which the Krautheimers had refurbished a few years before. According to Jasmine, the rooms were small, but still much better than the lodgings most ranches had. The Krautheimers had even offered her parents lodging there, but Jasmine said they preferred their independence and had opted for their own place. After Daisy and Arturo had set off for town in the pickup, Melissa announced it was time to check out the hidden room under the house. Evan passed. "I've been down in that creepy place more than enough," he said, and went to his room to play video games. The access to the hidden room was in the kitchen, which made sense, as the kitchen had its own entrance. This would have made it easy to move contraband in and out of the house. Like the rest of the ranch house, the kitchen had been modernized recently, although the Krautheimers had tried to maintain the original Western style. That meant brand new appliances, but everything else still looked quite rustic. Copper pots and pans hung from racks on the walls. The cabinets were fronted with etched glass, and the floor was the original wood. The kitchen was a wide open space with a large table in the center where the food prep was done. We had to slide the table aside to access the trap door to the liquor room, which was so cleverly constructed that it was hard to see, even when I was staring directly at it. The edges of the door matched up perfectly with the slats of wood in the floor, and the latch was concealed in a knot hole. The door was also much larger than I expected, 4 feet square and several inches thick. Once we moved the table, it took all three of us to lift the door, which we propped open against the kitchen counter. It revealed a great dark space beneath the house, with an old wooden staircase descending into it. Melissa handed us each a flashlight and led the way. The stairs creaked ominously as we came down them, and the temperature dropped 10 degrees. The air was dank and musty. I had expected to find a room the size of the kitchen, but it was far bigger, extending under much of the house, indicating that great amounts of illegal liquor must have been stored down there. Our flashlight beams didn't even reach the other side. It was a simple, large space dug into the earth. The height varied because the floor wasn't even. The ground beneath our feet was dirt, although the walls had been shored up with wooden slats, and every few feet there was a thick post to support the house above us. Some of the posts still had century-old oil lamps hanging from the hooks on them. "That's how they used to light this room," Melissa explained. "They didn't get electricity out here until the early 1960s.
"This is so big,"
Summer said, playing her flashlight around the cavernous space. How much liquor were they storing down here?
Plenty, Melissa replied.
This route supplied everywhere from Salt Lake City to Los Angeles. They were bringing it in by the truckload.
Did they ever get caught? I asked.
No, Melissa said. My folks said the government didn't really care to enforce the laws out here, but I'm betting that my ancestors bribed the feds. I mean, if no one cared about the laws, then why bother going through all this trouble to hide the stuff?
She led the way deeper into the gloom. As we passed beneath the living room, we could hear the conversations of the adults above us. One of the ranch hands was telling everyone else about what to do if you ran into a grizzly bear. I hadn't been able to spend much time with the three ranch hands yet, but Melissa had told me about them at dinner. Gavin was the oldest by far. He was in his 60s, but he had been working ranches in the area ever since he was a teenager and was regarded as one of the best cowboys in the region. Melissa claimed that Gavin had never ranged more than 100 miles from where he lived, although I didn't quite believe that. He didn't speak much. I hadn't heard him say a single word so far. The other two hands were much younger. In fact, Zach had only graduated high school that May. He was a local kid, big and muscular after years of playing football. Even if Melissa hadn't told me about his serious crush on Jasmine, I would have known because he almost never took his eyes off her. Aaron was a bit older, a college graduate from Montana State University, which was 90 miles north in Bozeman. He was from Bangalore, India, and had come to MSU to study mathematical engineering, but he had fallen in love with the ranching business and wanted to learn how it worked. Given the slight accent, I could tell Aaron was the one who was talking. You don't want to catch a bear by surprise in the woods, he said. So most local hikers tie little bells to their clothes to make noise. And you also want to be prepared to fend the bear off, so you should carry pepper spray.
Or you could just avoid the woods completely and stay inside, Pete suggested.
True, Aaron admitted. But if you go out, it also helps to know what kind of bears are in the area, which you do by looking at the scat.
Scat? Pete echoed, confused.
That's their poop, Mom said. When we track animals in the wild, that's how we refer to it.
Exactly, Aaron said. Each species of animal leaves a different type of scat, even different species of bears. Black bears aren't nearly as dangerous as grizzlies. Their scat generally has lots of grass and berry seeds in it.
And what does grizzly scat look like? Pete asked.
It has little bells in it and smells like pepper, Aaron replied. Everyone in the room burst into laughter, although Pete's sounded very nervous. Just then, I heard the sound of something scuttling in the basement behind me. I swung my flashlight that way, but whatever had made the noise was too far away or moving too fast for me to see it.
Do you have rats down here? I asked.
No, Melissa said dismissively. That was probably a gopher, or maybe a weasel hunting for gophers, or a black-footed ferret, or possibly a badger.
And I thought Teddy lived in a zoo, Summer said. It was spooky under the house, and I was feeling as though I had seen enough. But both of the girls were pressing on. I got the sense that Melissa was testing us, seeing if we had the guts to stay down there with her. There really wasn't any other reason to keep going. There was nothing else to see, but I didn't want to seem like a wuss, so I stayed with them. The house was designed so that the guest rooms were on the first floor, just beyond the living room, while the Krautheimer's rooms were upstairs. Thus, as we moved beyond the living room and passed under the guest bedrooms, we heard other voices. Heated ones. JJ and Candace McCracken.
Why would you wear that necklace? JJ demanded.
Because that's the whole point of jewelry, Candace replied sharply.
Why would you buy me something that you didn't want me to wear?
I sensed Summer tensing beside me in the darkness, as though she was upset to hear her parents arguing.
There are times when it makes sense to wear it, JJ told Candace, times when it can be protected, and this is not one of them.
Relax, Candace said. Nothing's gonna happen to it way out here in the boonies. It's probably safer here than it was in New York.
Which is another problem. I can't believe you took it to New York without telling me.
Oh, what else do I need to ask your permission for? What shoes I can bring? What dresses I can wear? When I can go to the bathroom? I'm an adult, JJ. I'm allowed to make my own decisions.
Well, maybe that shouldn't be the case, JJ replied gruffly.
There was a pause, and when Candace spoke again, her voice was cold. She was obviously bristling at the way JJ was treating her.
What is that supposed to mean?
It means you showed some terrible judgment here. So, yes, I think we do need to discuss what you do before you do it.
So you want to treat me like a child?
If you're going to act like one.
Well, here's another decision of mine that you probably won't like. You can sleep on the couch tonight.
Candace was right. JJ didn't like that at all, and things escalated quickly, with both the McCrackens talking heatedly at once. I glanced towards Summer, figuring she must be embarrassed that we were all hearing this, but she was turned away from me, and I couldn't catch her eye. I was about to suggest that we go back upstairs when someone suddenly grabbed Summer from behind. A hand reached out of the shadows and seized her shoulder. It happened so quickly it scared me to death. I screamed in fright, so loud that the McCrackens heard it through the floor and were startled into pausing their argument. Meanwhile, Summer handled things much differently, even though she was the one who'd been grabbed. Her parents had always been concerned for her safety, fearing that she was a target for kidnapping. When I had first met her, she'd had bodyguards with her at all times, but she had never liked this, and it made it hard for her to have a normal life. So she had asked her parents if she could lose the guards and take self-defense courses instead. She went twice a week and had improved quickly. Now she knew exactly what to do. The moment the hand touched her, Summer spun around and punched her attacker in the nose. Her attacker gave a yelp of pain and collapsed on the ground.
Evan? Melissa asked, recognizing the voice.
She aimed her flashlight toward the floor. Sure enough, Evan Krautheimer was lying there, cradling his now bloodied nose in his hands.
Are you okay? Melissa asked.
No, Evan muttered. She hit me.
Serves you right, Melissa said. What were you thinking, sneaking up on Summer like that? She's our guest.
I thought she was you, Evan said bitterly. You both look the same from behind in the dark.
He got back to his feet. Summer had done quite a job on him. Blood was dripping from between his cupped fingers.
I think we should put some ice on that, I said. Does it hurt?
Of course it hurts, Evan replied sourly.
Sorry, Summer said. Don't be, Melissa told her.
It was easy to find our way back to the exit as the light from the kitchen was spilling down through the open trap door. Evan hurried in that direction, and the rest of us followed. When we emerged back into the kitchen, I was able to get a better look at Evan. His nose was already swollen and black and blue, as if someone had swapped it out for a ripe plum, although it seemed to be his pride that was really hurting. He was certainly embarrassed by having his prank backfire, and that grew worse when his parents entered the kitchen. They had obviously heard his cry of pain.
What happened? Heidi asked, worried.
I fell, Evan lied, grabbing an ice pack from the freezer.
He did not, Melissa reported. He tried to sneak up on Summer down in the liquor room, and she popped him in the nose in self-defense.
Evan, Sydney exclaimed.
I wasn't trying to scare Summer. I was trying to scare Melissa.
Evan wrapped the ice pack in a hand towel and pressed it to his nose.
That's not a great defense, Heidi informed him. Do you need a doctor?
I'm fine. I just need to lie down.
Evan quickly left the kitchen. The rest of us followed him into the living room. This room was the focal point of the house, a large, open, two-story space with exposed wooden beams and an enormous stone fireplace. It was decorated in a popular local style that Summer had called aggressive frontiersman. All the furnishings were made from animals, or at least parts of animals. The walls were adorned with the taxidermied heads of deer and antelope that generations of Krautheimers had killed. Bison skin rugs lay on the floors, and the chandeliers and light fixtures were made from elk antlers. Elk shed their antlers every fall, leaving thousands strewn around the landscape, which makes them a very cheap building material. The overall effect was somewhat creepy. All the other adults had paused their conversation and were looking toward the kitchen, wondering what the commotion was about. Even J.J. McCracken was there, hovering in the doorway between the living room and the hall to the guest bedrooms, although Candace was not, indicating that J.J. had in fact been booted out of their room.
Is everything all right? Mom asked.
Fine, fine, Sydney answered. A prank just got a little out of hand.
Evan tried to scare Summer and she punched him, Melissa said in a cheerful voice that indicated she would be happy to tell people this over and over again.
The ranch hands all stifled their laughter, while J.J. McCracken beamed proudly at the way his daughter had handled herself. Evan grew even more embarrassed.
It was an accident, he muttered, then hurried up the stairs to his bedroom.
Heidi followed him to make sure he was all right. An awkward silence settled over the room. No one seemed quite sure what to say. In addition to the ranch hands and Pete, my parents were also hanging out with Karina, the McCracken's pilot, and Ray, Pete's husband. Karina had been a test pilot in the Air Force, but had served her 20 years and earned her pension, so now she had found work that was much safer, less demanding, and better paying. She still had a very military demeanor, right down to her crew cut. I had met her a few times, but never really spent any time with her. I didn't know Ray that well either, although we had played cards on the flight to West Yellowstone. A carpenter at Fun Jungle, he was a lot different from Pete. He enjoyed being outdoors. He liked animals. And he was dressed in comfortable, well-worn clothes that probably cost less than what one of Pete's silk ties did. Unlike a lot of adults, he seemed to really enjoy being with kids and had happily talked to Summer and me about all sorts of things. There was a loud bang from the kitchen, so sudden it made everyone jump. This was followed by the sound of something large scraping over the floor. Everyone turned that way, looking unsettled, wondering what was going on. Jasmine entered from the kitchen, holding her phone to her ear with one hand and holding a set of keys in the other.
I've got your keys, she was saying into the phone. They were in the kitchen.
She noticed everyone was looking her way, then realized she needed to explain things.
The kids left the trap door to the liquor room open, she said. I closed it before anyone fell through. It was heavier than I expected.
That explained the bang, and the scraping must have been her shoving the table back into place over it. Jasmine was about to return to her phone call, but then grew worried. She looked back to the kitchen.
No one's still down there, are they?
No, Melissa said. Everyone's out.
Jasmine sighed with relief, then got back on the phone.
I'll hold on to Mom's keys for her. Okay, love you too.
She hung up, then held up the keys and explained,
Mom forgot these, and she wants everyone to know breakfast will be ready at 7 a.m. tomorrow. If you want to eat, don't be late.
All the adults immediately checked their watches to see what time it was.
Well, Dad said, we have a big day tomorrow. I think maybe we ought to turn in.
Everyone else chimed in agreement, although Zach waited to see what Jasmine would say before echoing her. It took a few more minutes for everyone to leave, because adults never can say goodnight or goodbye quickly. Then the ranch hands all sauntered out and headed back to the bunkhouse. My parents, Karina, Pete, and Ray all headed down the hall to the guest rooms. There were four rooms, although they all varied in size. The McCrackens and my family had the bigger ones because Summer and I each had to sleep on sofa beds in those rooms. Karina's room was on the same side of the hall as the McCrackens, while Pete and Ray's was next to ours. JJ didn't return to his room, although he obviously didn't want everyone to know he'd been kicked out.
I think I might stay up for a while longer, he said as an excuse. Maybe watch the stars for a bit.
Are you sure, Daddy? Summer asked.
I could tell she was hoping he might change his mind and try to make amends with her mother.
I'm sure. You know how I love the stars.
JJ headed out onto the porch. Even though it was a bit sad, I found the whole charade amusing. JJ McCracken was one of the most powerful and respected businessmen on the planet, with a reputation for being a ruthless negotiator. And yet, here he was, afraid to ask his own wife if she'd let him back into their bedroom. Plus, it seemed to me that Candace had been right. Maybe it hadn't been shrewd to bring an expensive necklace on her trip, but JJ had bought it for her, and he had been awfully condescending during their argument. I figured that maybe JJ was gathering his nerve to face Candace again, but he never did. He ended up sleeping on the couch in the living room, which was why he wasn't in their bedroom when Sasquatch broke in.